Hey, are you tired of meeting with prospects only to have them put you off again and again, turning them into yet another missed opportunity? Are you tired of trying to do the same things in meetings and not seeing any improvement in the amount of business you're closing? Do you want to stop giving your time away in hopes that a client will buy something or someday transfer their assets? Well, Whiteboard University is our two-hour live workshop where we will teach you how to have engaging meetings with every prospect and client you meet with, how to quantify your advice so prospects are willing and excited to pay you a financial planning fee, and finally, where we teach you how to explain financial strategies in a dynamic, interesting way that will separate you from all the boring advisors who do the same old thing. If you're serious about having better client meetings and closing business faster, visit WhiteboardU.com today and sign up for one of our live workshops in November. Whiteboard University offers a 100% money-back guarantee if we don't help you improve your communication and meeting skills. That's WhiteboardU.com. We'll see you there.
Rob, thank you for coming to the podcast. I have multiple people on my team that have read your book. They were really excited about us connecting. So if you wouldn't mind jumping in, kind of brief background, your author, speaker, entrepreneur, very impressive resume, and I'm going to get into the practical stuff. We promise our audience that. But if you can give us kind of a high-level intro, I'd love that.
Sure thing. And first, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you taking time. And I'm excited to hopefully make a big impact today with your listeners. I'm an entrepreneur from an early age. I started selling blow pop lollipops out of my locker in ninth grade. And I usually like to share that story mainly because I bet a lot of your listeners are shaking their head. They're like, I did some version of that too, or they at least know somebody that has. Out of college, I started a business in 1991 with my best friend who I was selling those blow pops with. And we grew the business. In 2004, we sold the business to a public company and bought it back 18 months later. Right around that time, we thought, hey, what could we do differently here? And we put a great emphasis on caring for the totality of our team members' lives and a huge emphasis on our corporate culture. And so we built the business from that point on, being very open, honest, and authentic from the tactical stuff, both within the business, like sharing the financials and teaching financial literacy, all the way to like some of the struggles that we might talk about that I've had in my life. A few years ago, we passed the torch on to a new CEO who hopefully will take the company, and we believe will, to new heights. And I'm doing this wonderful work today that we're going to talk a little bit about.
That's great. What was the business, the core of it?
The company is called Image One, and it's a managed print services business. Yeah.
So what was, when you said you rebought it, I've heard that story more often where it's sold and then whether the company says, hey, we just don't know how to run it or we're not maximizing it. And then the founder gets to buy it back.
Yeah.
What's the difference? Was the first round just pure results? I want to make a lot of money at all costs. And then you're like, man, we got to focus more on the people. Like, how was it different round one versus round two?
So, you know, being an entrepreneur our whole life, that's all we knew how to operate. So then this big company bought us and we had a 3-year employment agreement. And so all of a sudden we were integrated into this corporate culture and we didn't know how to, you know, be in that culture. It was very difficult for us. So we were struggling, to say the least, to, you know, be within all those dynamics that were going on. And so when they had a shift in their leadership team, a new CEO came in and he came to us and said, not part of the strategy anymore. Can we get this back to you? Get it off our balance sheet? You know, we said, yeah, that sounds great because the corporate culture wasn't working for us. But it also kind of gave us a window into the types of experiences employees are having. And we thought, you know, that's not a great experience. How could we do this different, differentiate ourselves, and then also, you know, make this a wonderful place for people to work where they might look back after retirement and say, wow, I was really glad I was part of that company and part of their growth and, you know, the support that they had for me, not just on the business side of things, but also personally.
Yeah, that's impressive. So with your work, if it's fair to kind of break it into the outer and the inner work, I've spent a lot of time over the last 4 or 5 years doing more of the inner work, and I can't wait to get to that part with you. But
cool,
I feel like as a business owner early on, I was more open to the external practical stuff because I wanted quick results. So if we can start there, and then we'll kind of find our way into the work that I bet all of us entrepreneurs eventually find ourselves sitting in, which is the deep inner work. But practically, you can start us there on kind of what you've learned, what you teach, and then I'll kind of push you a little bit for us to get kind of a few layers.
Cool. Yeah. So right around 1999, my business partner and I met Gino Wickman. Gino, for those that don't know, created a process called the EOS process and entrepreneurial operating system. And so he was just getting started. And as it turns out, we were one of his first clients. And he always says we were kind of his guinea pig, along with about 6 other clients who knew the thing would blow up the way it did. But he and I struck up a really close friendship. And so we would meet at a coffee shop, Starbucks, a few times a year for like half a day. And, you know, Gino was very intentional about the way he was living his life. And I was really impressed by it. And so I started to pick up on these little things that he was doing, ways that he was thinking, things that he was incorporating into his days and into his weeks and months and years. And I would leave the meetings and I'd think, I should be doing that. Wouldn't you know it? I kind of incorporated certain pieces to it. And many years later, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago now, he actually wrote them all out and created a name for it called the 10 Disciplines for Managing and Maximizing Your Energy. And so those were really key, among some other things, but those were really key to create a strong foundation in my life that gave me back my greatest asset, which is time. And with that greatest asset back, I had more space and clarity in my mind, not just to run my business and do a better job there, but also to do the inner work and be able to do it really well.
What are some of the practical things you've seen with entrepreneurs? And you've blazed this trail for a lot of us, which I appreciate that you're talking about stuff that you've done yourself. Entrepreneurs are listening now, advisors are listening now. What are some of the practical foundational things that you would say, hey, you need to have these 3 or 4 things addressed, aware of, before you can really move on to some of the more deeper work?
Yeah. Well, I think first and foremost, you know, what I see the most of, and let me create a little context here. We have an assessment on our website called the True Self Assessment. So you can go to the10disciplines.com and take that assessment. We've had about 3,000 people take it now. And everybody in your listening audience are the types of people that are taking the assessment. 76% of those people do not think in 10-year timeframes. So that's my starting point to answer your question. You know, this is your North Star. Where do you see your life in 10 years? And knowing that is important because it informs your actions and decisions in the present moment. Okay, so this isn't goal setting, it's mindset. And so when you get really clear that you want to have a loving relationship with your spouse, I'll just use that as an example, how you treat that person today makes a difference 10 years from now. So just like in your businesses, you might be thinking, some of you might be thinking in 10-year timeframes, and knowing that you want to set it up in a particular way so it is healthy and can withstand difficult times. You know, we need to do this both in our personal life and in our business and then integrate the two. That's really key. So that's one area that always comes to my mind as a starting point.
All right. So you triggered me there a little bit. So I want to be coaching from you. So I was the 10-year thinker in business and life until life brought me some massive curveballs that I never expected. And what it did, at least for a short period of time, was shortened where I was like, I'm making 3-month plans, 6-month plans. And there was a little relief in that for me that I'm not always trying to look so far ahead and like, you know, not be as kind of present or strategic thinking in the short term. So how, I believe what you're saying, but something in me is kind of pushing back on that, saying,
yes,
it was too long, is, you know, because so much can change between now and then. So how would you coach me up on still being able to think in the long term?
Yeah. So it's not goal setting. So it's, how do you see your life in 10 years? You might say, I'm not suggesting this is what you would say, Sten, but you might say, or one of the listeners might say something like, I want to have meaningful connections with all people in my life. I want to show up and be loving and unconditional in all areas of my life. You know, I want to be a good citizen and a caring person. You know, it can be that kind of broad, because that just informs your actions today. You know, now if somebody wants to say, which is okay, by the way, if they want to say, I want to have a particular net worth and I want my business to be a particular size with a certain amount of employees, that's okay too. You know, it's your 10-year thinking vision. It isn't anyone else's. So to take away some of the pushback, so to speak, on where your mind is at, I think you can still create that 10-year thinking vision, because the 10-year thinking vision is there with the knowledge that in a 10-year time frame, you're going to have 2 amazing years. You're going to have 6 really solid years, and you're going to have 2 years that are going to be really, really tough. And that's what you're referring to. Yeah. And so the 10-year thinking keeps you grounded. You know, I've got time here, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going through a period now, and I'll get through to the other side. It always happens. And so that's what makes it so powerful.
Okay. No, I appreciate the free coaching.
That
helps me think about it differently.
And keep your cadence, you know, if that's what you do and it works for you. I love that too, by the way.
Yeah. I do appreciate the kind of normalizing or expecting the hard times. I read a book, I can't remember what it was, but it talked about trying never to be surprised. And what I appreciate about EOS, which we're kind of implementing, is the structure of it, that, you know, breaking it down to daily tasks and clarity for your team, which I feel like most leaders, and sounds like you've been immersed in EOS, so it's probably in your veins.
It is.
Okay, let's make it up as we go. Let's have a team meeting, because you should probably have team meetings. But it lacks the structure, the implementation, the accountability. And so we're big fans as we implement that.
Yeah.
But in your teaching, is part of it kind of just normalizing things for people, just saying, hey, just so you know, I'm gonna show you what's coming to some degree. And it's gonna be nuanced for all of us, but so people are kind of less surprised as
business. For sure. It's all about being in the right mindset, and then, you know, being practical too. There's an aspect there for sure. You know, in your business, you got to be prepared for a downturn. Something's coming. You know, you can go back 100 years or more, and you can see in 10-year timeframes, there's always bumps in the road. And so you got to be prepared, have a strong, you know, all the stuff, you know, strong balance sheet, cash in the bank, et cetera, et cetera. Don't overextend yourself, you know, so you can be prepared and take advantage of those times. I mean, again, we're talking outside stuff and we're talking company stuff, but, you know, there are so many companies that when a downturn comes, they're well positioned to take huge advantage because they were prepared. And it's so beautiful. But also personally, it's great to be prepared. And you know that being in your business, I'm sure you're preparing people all the time, you know, for that challenging year or two that they're going to encounter.
How's your mindset shifted over time? I talk to a lot of business owners as clients and a lot of advisors within our coaching community. And I find most people have a general level of frustration with leading and coaching other people, because as business owners, it's like they don't want as much as we do. It's hard to find good people. And I think interacting around other people, like that's a challenge. And it's so rewarding as well if you can kind of sit in and get better at it. What have you found is, are there some people that just, it's just challenging? And then are there others that just kind of fool you? You have to find a mindset where you just kind of embrace the difficulty of leading others and motivating.
Of leading. So I love this question, because your audience, you and your audience are driven. You're driven people, driven entrepreneurs, advisors, and it's in your DNA. You're at the 10% of society. So think about that for a second. And it's a blessing and it's a curse. And that's what you're bringing up right now. You know, the blessing is that, you know, you're born with this superhuman stamina, this strength. You're the creators, you're visionary. You know, you come up with new ideas, new ways of doing things, new ways of helping people see things, systems, processes, or just shaking up an entire industry. But the curse is that you do a lot of damage to yourself, both mentally and physically, without even realizing it oftentimes. And you can leave a black trail to those who are around you. And so the key here is learning and accepting that that's who you are at your core, embracing it, but then learning how to manage it. And that helps me segue kind of into a different piece to this, and that is just simply how you show up. So first and foremost, if you don't care to manage people, because that's part of leading, then you shouldn't. And then you what you need to do is create a team of people that will do that for you and stay in your lane, so you are not dragging people down with your energy, because they're going to pick up on the energy that you bring. Everyone's looking to you for the energy. And if you're frustrated because people aren't doing what you want them to do, their energy is going to go down too.
So what I'm hearing you say is that if you're not good at that naturally, it doesn't mean you don't get to own a business or be an entrepreneur. But you have to recognize that shortcoming to some degree, or that it's not your strength, and backfill. Because what's the alternative? You're a business owner, you hire people, maybe you make enough money, but you frustrate employees, you have high turnover, you're kind of always feeling heavy and negative, and it just kind of radiates from you. What's the risk of not being aware that that's not your strength?
Being miserable.
Yeah.
That's the risk. Yeah. And how many business owners are? They are. I mean, and they can't get themselves to invest in a key person, you know, to do all the stuff that they're horrible at. You know, there's many things, unique ability, your superpower, you know, you can call it all kinds of things, you know, but that's the quadrant that you want to get yourself into, and do what you're best at and make an investment in yourself and in your team if you truly care, and delegate off that piece. If you are not a good manager of people, a hirer of people, holding people accountable, all the things that are important, leading and managing, holding accountable, then get yourself out of that box and you'll feel lighter, freer, more creative. You'll have more energy. You will end up being a better leader because you won't have to deal with the minutiae. And the person, and there are amazing leaders out there. We all know that. So you find that person and that's your key person, and they're taking care of all of that. And you have a great culture in your organization. I gotta believe most of us want to provide a good working environment for our employees, for our team. I mean, we're human. I think that's just a natural thing that we want. We're just not all capable of doing it well ourselves.
I remember trying with everything I had to emulate the leaders I saw that had this like charisma. They'd lead the team meetings and just like they came with this energy that drew people in. And I look back for a long time, for me, I was more of like, hey, results, like Sten, you want Sten on your team because he'll push and get things done. But I wasn't necessarily the the warm and fuzzy. You want to hang out with Sten, but you do want to be on his team.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. And so for me, I had to internally struggle with, Sten, that's probably not who you are naturally, because it felt draining to me to try to adapt to that too heavily.
Yeah.
But what I did find is I did start delegating more and finding people that could, you know, take care of the office stuff or, you know, structure the team meetings, things that didn't get me excited. It then kind of, the lighter load almost allowed me to release more of a natural kind of like, oh, Sten's happy to be here. And he's not having to be the one keeping everybody accountable every day, which is kind of a, you know, a heavy job. He actually has to come in and kind of celebrate more. And so I don't think I'll ever be the biggest cheerleader in the office, but because I wasn't forced to operate in these roles that I didn't enjoy, something else was able to come out that I was like, oh no, there is something in there that's a little more natural, that I am more of a coach and I somewhat of a cheerleader. I'll just probably never be the full-on charismatic leader that I've seen before.
Yeah. And was that a hard transition for you, or did it feel like, what was the feeling that came up when all this realization began to come to you?
I think there was some initial kind of failure element of business owner, ex-athlete. You're just like, I want to be able to be good at anything I try to be good at. But then there was also this resignation of just like, giving myself permission and grace not to have to be everything to everybody all the time. And then that's, I mean, part of your book, Shine, which I want to kind of transition in kind of the inner work, is I was all about the practical external stuff. I want my business to win. I want to keep people accountable. I want to reward them for their success. I want to do all these external things. And what's amazing is I was able to do that for quite a while ignoring, at times, I think for business owners, your trauma is what fuels you. And it's like, it helps you look good. And then all of a sudden you're realizing like, is that my fire? Like if I put that out, if I address some of this stuff inside of me, am I all of a sudden going to become weak? Or, and so when I went and started going down that path of looking internally, it allowed more of my true self to shine, but I did have to kind of face some of these things that were part of my recipe of success. And thankfully they're not required to be successful. So yeah. I kind of missed that.
That's so good. You know, we have these 10 disciplines that are this foundation that we teach. And discipline number three is know thyself. And it's, and you know, what you just shared is exactly what that is. And, you know, for many years, you had an imprint about what leadership meant and how you had to be. And as, and in a sense, you know, you were, I might be over exaggerating, so, you know, give me some leeway here, but, you know, maybe in some ways you were showing up as a chameleon, you know, you were just trying to be something you weren't. And I love the way you describe it, because it was draining your energy. And I know that feeling. It's, you know, you're showing up and you're trying to push through it all because you're supposed to be leading the company. And that energy that you're talking about is what I was mentioning before. People pick up on your energy. And when your energy is low and drained, it brings them down. Mm-hmm. So I love that you had that awareness and shifted and made the moves, you know, whatever moves you needed to make to get in the place you needed to be.
Yeah.
To and drive the company.
Back, the version that I was trying to be attracted a certain kind of person to be team members. And
yeah.
And what I realized is I kind of tried to live more healthy and clear, you then, and I end up seeing these kind of voids where it's like, oh, people are not a good fit for where they are because I'm no longer over operating.
Yeah.
If I find my lane and try to live in it, you end up facing some things that are even more difficult. You're not, this is not
so spied on
that. I feel like I'm still now handling the repercussions of the decisions I made 5 years ago when that wasn't even really me.
That's right.
There's this heaviness that continues to where it's like, I don't know if there's ever a day where it's all done and it's like, hey, we did it. It's almost this tension is just, it's settling into the process is what I'm learning, as opposed to fighting for it to be finished. It's like, I don't know if it ever is.
There you go. Oh my God. There's so much wisdom in your story. Thank you for sharing. It's so great. You know, what you start to realize is you're not in alignment with the people that are around you all of a sudden. It's scary. It's like you built this organization and all of a sudden you're looking around and you're like, I don't want to work with these people. And I don't know, they really want to work with me so much, you know? And it's like, now you have to like deal with that. And that's hard. And, you know, we talk about in the book, making decisions, all decisions are made from love or fear. And this is a great example. It's when you come to that point, that friction point, and it's like, okay, how am I going to make this decision? A decision from fear is, don't change anything. I don't want to rock the boat. What are people going to think? You know, they're going to think we're not doing well, or I'm a horrible leader. Or do you make it from love and, you know, make the changes that are necessary to create the kind of business that not just serves you, but obviously serves the culture, the people in the organization? And I mean, what are we getting into this for? You know, and taking all this risk, you know, to have a life that we don't love every aspect of? Why would we do that? Just go work for somebody. It's way easier.
So it makes it sound all crazy if you put it that way. Let's just go back to ignoring it. That's
easy. Right.
So if we're going more into kind of the Shine book and kind of the inner work, in my experience, and I was in this camp, there's a much heavier resistance to receiving feedback in that department versus the, hey, how can I run better team meetings? How can I prospect better? Like the practical day-to-day results-oriented stuff, to where it's like, I get a result immediately.
Yeah.
How do you get people to at least say, you're right, that's important, and I need to start down that path to some degree? Like, is it like life crisis where they're kind of forced into it, or is it possible to edge somebody down that path?
Yeah. Well, in our book, we are hoping to open up some minds around this, because, and there's a few things I want to say here. First is, you know, you mentioned, I don't remember your exact words, but it's the words that are very commonly used, which is, I have this drive, this edge, this thing that has helped me create success and continued success. And I'm afraid to, like, if I start doing some of this stuff, I'm going to lose that. And we write in the book that it is possible to be driven and have inner peace. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't you want that? Mm-hmm. We want to increase your drive, actually. And these concepts that we write about are intended to do that. You know, when you're working from your true self, you are so much clearer about what matters most in your life and what you want out of your business and out of your life. And everything drives in that direction, full steam ahead times 10.
Yeah.
So you're going to get way more than what you even could have imagined. But at the same time, you're going to have peace while you're doing it. And that's what's missing. So, you know, the idea is that you know, okay, I understand I'm driven. So here's the next thing. The next thing is, many entrepreneurs, there's a great friend of ours named Justin Breen, and he wrote an article for Inc. magazine. He works with entrepreneurs, and he mentioned in the article that there are these different traits that he's noticed that are pretty common amongst entrepreneurs. I want to read them to you. They've had at least one of the following things happen: bankruptcy or near bankruptcy, heightened levels of anxiety, depression, a traumatic experience as a child or a young adult. And then Gino and I, when we were writing this, we added a fifth one called addiction, which is doing something that's not good for you. And the number one addiction that entrepreneurs, business leaders have is work. And so what's up with that is what I like to say. All five of those, you know, I have three of them. If you add addiction on work, I'm four. So, you know, I was like, wow, that's a wake up call. Mm-hmm. So we dig deeper into this. Now, I hope you all will stay with me as I share this. We are walking around with a suit of armor. We're in a cocoon. Okay. Our true self is in there, who you really, really are at your core. But we've learned a certain way to go through life. Most of the time, it's how we should look on the outside. That's the outer world stuff that we talk about. And our ego is protecting us. That's the suit of armor. That's the cocoon that we find ourselves in. And our ego doesn't want us to feel pain. And so that's what's happening. And that's why so many entrepreneurs are unemployable. So they jump in and create their own business to get all involved with it, to stay away from the real stuff that they have to be addressing. That's our ego saying, I'm going to drive and drive and have tons of outer world success to show the world I'm something. Yeah. I'm going to show my parents. I'm going to show my teachers. I'm going to show whoever that I can be successful and I am something. And then what happens is many somewhere along the way climbing the mountain or even getting to the top of it, they look around, they go, I've got all the stuff I could have ever imagined. You know, I have a great company, I have people, I have money, I have a great house, I go on great vacations, yada, yada. Why am I still miserable? What is happening here? What's happening is you have not addressed some of the things that have happened in your life. Some of these things could be big traumas. Some of them can just be little things that happen along the way. But you got to address them. So you start taking off the suit of armor, doing the inner work. You know, the cocoon starts to dissolve. Another way we like to say it is we chip away at the block of marble to show the masterpiece that you truly are. Mm. And once you start to get inside there, it's beautiful. You start to open up and you start to free yourself from all these other things that have been holding you back from what your actual true potential is. And you start to notice there's no mountain. There's no mountain to climb.
Yeah, you're good enough just as you are.
You're good just as you are. It doesn't matter how much success you have. You can have success, failure. You're now you're comfortable in exactly who you are. Now you're free. You're 1,000 pounds lighter. And so all your decisions, all your feelings, your thoughts, your emotions, they're now all redirected. And this is where you actually find this greater success in business because you're free. And you're doing it with peace.
Do you think somebody can do that on their own in their head?
I think most of us need something to help us. I think there are now, if a book is on your own, I think books help. You know, if a podcast like yours is on your own, you know, podcasts help. Listening, getting information into our analytical mind to help us connect some dots is a good thing. Going to therapy, which is really common these days, obviously. When I first started going to therapy over 25 years ago, it wasn't like that. Yeah. But thank goodness. So, you know, these are areas where we like to say you're dipping your toe into this inner work, but you can keep taking things deeper and deeper if you want to. And we encourage that you do. And it takes time and patience. And it sometimes it's hard and painful. We always like to say every time you shed a layer, there will be tears. You know, but that's a release. That's a release of something. You shed a layer, you're that much freer. And then more things start to come up. I believe, and this is my own experience and the experience of many that we have worked with, that there's a certain point where I want to say it gets fun. In other words, you look forward to shedding more layers, even though you know it's going to be hard. You know, I used to run marathons. I always looked forward to running the marathon, even though I knew it was going to be a super painful 3.5, you know, hours or so. So, you know, it's like that. You're working the muscle. And so, but back to your question, sorry, I got a little off track, doing it alone. So I think it's really wonderful, though, to find a community, to find a support system, therapist, a group, whatever, a place to go where there's some structure, where there's some experts, you know, that can really help you navigate you know, your feelings, your emotions, and your thoughts.
Yeah, as I started venturing down that, I did like an intensive kind of retreat thing for a long weekend, which was the last thing I wanted to do. Share it for other people. We even got to a session where we had to do like drama therapy, where they made me act things out.
Yeah.
Everything my body is firing to like run out that door. Because you want to hold on to what is known. You don't want to be exposed. Like, I had to go into it. Luckily, I had some counselor's help ahead of time setting the stage, being like, this will trigger so much in you to just keep the status quo at all costs.
Yes.
It was what you know. It's what's comfortable. But out of that intensive experience, one of the biggest breakthroughs I had is that you can serve the world without trying to save it. And I look back and that it makes me emotional thinking back to, you know, 12-year-old Sten thinking he even had the ability to save the world. Yet that's the posture I carried in everything I did for whatever reason. So I'm a big advocate for kind of leaning into that side, the therapy of it, because like you're one or two breakthroughs away from being like, wait, I don't have to live my life that way. And I'm still a good person, and then no one's mad at me, and the world's going to continue to spin around. And if I take a week off and go on vacation with my family, the world's not coming to an end. My clients are going to be okay. So I love working with business owners on the finance side, but also love working with advisors and coaching community, because it is the thing that you were revealing in your book that's like, hey guys, we can all say it because we're all thinking the same thing.
Right. And thank you for sharing that. That gave me goosebumps. It's really beautiful. And, you know, I even got a little contraction when you said we had to do drama therapy, because I'm familiar with it. And the idea of doing it does evoke the same thing that you had. And one thing I want to kind of build on that idea for a second, not on drama therapy, but how you reacted physically to it, is a really key point. Because, you know, we have our minds that are very active, and we kind of create stories that become our reality. And then we have our bodies, which most of us aren't really in tune to, and how our bodies react to emotions, to situations. And so when we have a physiological reaction to something, that is our body sending us a message. And our ability to tune into our body and work through noticing where that reaction is coming. Is it in your chest? Is it in is it in your neck? Is it in your gut? You know, all these kinds of areas. And working through that, not analytically, actually, getting into the body. There's a lot of work on this, and there's a great book called The Body Keeps the Score, if anyone's interested, because it's said that our body is really the one sending us the messages, not so much our mind. Our minds are actually in the way, and it's our ability to notice that. Yeah.
I love this. I talk about this all day, and we'll need to regroup, but for everybody, where can they go? I know you have a lot of great content out there. Shine's a great book.
Thank you, Sten.
Everybody go to kind of just get a kind of deep dive in all the stuff you've created.
The10disciplines.com is the place to go. You can spell out 10 or you can use the number 10. And I highly recommend, the greatest starting point for everybody is that assessment that I mentioned, the true self-assessment. The first 10 questions revolve around the foundation that you have in your life that gives you back your greatest asset, time, and helps to bring space into your mind, clear your mind. And the next 10 revolve around the inner world stuff. So you'll kind of see where you line up there. And that's a great starting point.
That's great, my friend. I appreciate you.
Sten, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me and the great work that you're doing.
You bet. We'll talk soon.
See ya.